It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to Perplexity.
In a remote area of Siberia, in June of 1908, there would be a massive explosion. According to most scientists, this explosion was caused by an asteroid that exploded with the power of 250 Hiroshima bombs. This explosion would be spotted around the world, and it would have ripple effects. But at the time, hardly anyone knew that it had happened. This area of Siberia was incredibly remote. People knew something strange was going on, but they didn't know what it was and where it originated from. The explosion wouldn't be investigated until years later, and scientists still can't be 100% certain of what actually happened that day. This explosion has led to thousands of scientific studies and fascinating conspiracy theories. This is the story of the Tunguska event. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I am your host, Kadra. If you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you're a returning listener, hello, my friends. Welcome back. So happy you're here. I have a crazy story for you guys today. Some people say this is a natural disaster. Other people say this is signs of alien life. So I will leave it up to you. I want to thank my dad for requesting this topic. And just want to remind everybody to follow along. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to subscribe. If you're listening on a podcast platform, I would love if you leave a 5-star review, because each time you do that, it really helps the show and boosts me up the algorithms. If you really want to support the show, go check out patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast, where you get early and ad-free episodes. You will also unlock tons and tons of bonus content. So all the sources for today's episode will be available down in the show notes. And without further ado, let's get into this crazy story of the Tunguska event. On the morning of June 30th, 1908, thousands of reindeer were roaming in a remote area of Russia near the Podkamennaya Tunguska River in Yeniseik Governorate. These reindeer were tended to by Evenki natives and Russian settlers that lived there. And this was a seemingly normal, quiet, beautiful morning. But suddenly, around 7:17 a.m., locals would notice a bluish hue of light in the sky. This light got brighter and brighter, nearly as bright as the sun. The light seemed to be moving across the sky quickly over the hills of the northwest of the nearby lake. Closer to the horizon, there was a flash followed by a billowing cloud of smoke, and then a pillar of fire, which sounds absolutely horrifying. A red light cascaded across the hills, and this pillar of fire split into two pillars of fire, then faded and turned to black. Then it was silent. About 10 minutes later, there were sounds similar to artillery fire. After the sound was an unbelievable shockwave, so powerful that people in the area fell to the ground. People closer to where the explosion was were actually thrown into the air and knocked unconscious. The windows of people's remote homes were shattered, and homes closer to the blast were destroyed altogether. There were also massive forest fires. This was an explosion that was powerful enough to be felt from Siberia all the way over in Washington, D.C. Airwaves from the blast were also detected in other countries like Germany, Denmark, Croatia, the UK, Batavia, and the Dutch East Indies. In some areas, the shock was so powerful, it was equivalent to a 5.0 earthquake on the Richter scale. So obviously, this explosion was no joke. There was even this astronomer working in Northern Ireland that night in Armagh Observatory, and he would write in his logbook that he noticed a, quote, nocturnal glow in the sky that was so bright he could read his newspaper even after midnight. But again, this area was so remote, nobody knew where this came from, what happened. The other good thing is that because this was such a remote area, there were very few human casualties. And that just depends on the sources you read. Some people say there were no human casualties. Other people say a few people died because of after effects. For example, some sources I read said a couple of elderly people did die from heart attacks afterwards. But there are no confirmed immediate deaths from this explosion. However, that's just for humans. There were many, many herds of reindeer in the area that died instantly from the blast. So over the next few days, the skies in Asia and Europe were glowing. People would go outside at midnight and they could take a brightly lit photograph. The explosion was equal to about 4 megatons of TNT. But because this area was so remote, while yes, people all around the world were feeling these after effects, and because it was 1908, no one knew what was going on. And the people that lived in the area were also very confused. Natives that lived here thought that their god was angry with them and punishing them. Other people thought that this was the sign of another war. When they heard all of those artillery explosions, they thought that their enemy was firing at them. With one farmer saying about this, quote, "At that time, I was plowing my land at Narodima, 6 kilometers to the west of Kesma. When I sat down to have my breakfast beside my plow, I heard sudden bangs, as if from gunfire. My horse fell to its knees. From the north side above the forest, a flame shot up. I thought the enemy was firing, since at that time, there was talk of a war. Then I saw that the fir forest had been bent over by the wind, and I thought of a hurricane. I seized hold of my plow with both of my hands so that it wouldn't be carried off. The wind was so strong that it carried off some of the soil from the surface of the ground, and then the hurricane drove a wall of water up the Angara, a siege, perhaps. I saw it all quite clearly because my land was on a hillside." End quote. And there's a lot of interesting accounts from the explosion made by locals, so we can use these to try to piece together what happened. Some of these reports were included in a couple of local papers, while others weren't recorded and distributed until decades later, when a formal investigation was finally done. The first report of the explosion was published in the Irkutsk paper on July 2nd, 1908. The report would read, quote, "On the morning of the 17th of June, around 9 o'clock, we observed an unusual natural occurrence. In the North Karenlinsky village, the peasants saw to the northwest, rather high above the horizon, some strangely bright, impossible to look at, bluish-white, heavenly body, which for 10 minutes moved downwards. The body appeared as a pipe, i.e. a cylinder. The sky was cloudless. Only a small dark cloud was observed in the general direction of the bright body. It was hot and dry. As the body neared the ground of the forest, the bright body seemed to smudge. And then it turned into a giant billow of black smoke. And a loud knocking, not thunder, was heard as if large stones were falling or artillery was fired. All of the buildings shook. At the same time, the cloud began emitting flames of uncertain shapes. All villagers were stricken with panic and took to the streets. Women cried, thinking that it was the end of the world. The author of these lines was meantime in the forest about 6 versts, 6.4 kilometers, north of Kerensk, and heard to the northeast some kind of artillery barrage that repeated at intervals of 15 minutes at least 10 times. In Kerensk and a few buildings in the walls facing northeast, window glass shook. End quote. And here's a couple of reports that were released years later after the investigation was finally done. This first one is from a Siberian resident named S. Semenov. Semenov would recall in 1930 in an interview, quote, "I suddenly saw that directly to the north, over the Onkuls-Tunguska Road, the sky split in two. Fire appeared high and wide over the forest. The split in the sky grew larger, and the entire northern sky was covered in fire. At that moment, I became so hot that I couldn't bear it, as if my shirt was on fire. From the northern side, where the fire was, came strong heat. I wanted to tear off my shirt and throw it down. But then the sky was shut closed, as a strong thump sounded, and I was thrown a few meters. I lost my senses for a moment, but then my wife ran out and led me to the house. After such noise came, as if rocks were falling or cannons were firing, the earth shook. And when I was on the ground, I pressed my head down, fearing rocks would smash it in. When the sky opened up, hot wind raced between the houses, like from cannons, which left traces in the ground like pathways, and it damaged some crops. Later we saw that many windows were shattered, and in the barn, a part of the iron lock snapped." End quote. This next account comes from Chuchen of the Shanyagir tribe, and this was recorded in 1926. Quote, "We had a hut by the river with my brother, Chekarin. We were sleeping when suddenly we both woke up at the exact same time. Somebody shoved us. We heard whistling and felt strong wind. Chekarin said, quote, 'Can you hear all of those birds flying overhead?' We were both in the hut and we couldn't see what was going on outside. Suddenly I was shoved again, this time so hard that I fell into the fire. I got scared. Chekarin was scared too. We started crying out for father, mother, brother, but no one answered. There was noise beyond the hut. We could hear trees falling down. Chekarin and I got out of our sleeping bags and wanted to run out, but then the thunder struck. This was the first thunder. The earth began to move and rock. The wind hit our hut and knocked it over. My body was pushed down by sticks, but my head was in the clear. Then I saw a wonder. Trees were falling, the branches were on fire. It became mighty bright. How can I say this? As if there was a second sun, but my eyes were hurting. I even closed them. It was like what the Russians call lightning. And immediately there was a loud thunderclap. This was the second thunder. The morning was sunny. There were no clouds. Our sun was shining brightly as usual, and suddenly there came a second one. Chekarin and I had some difficulty getting out from under the remains of our hut. Then we saw that above, but in a different place, there was another flash and a loud thunder came. This was the third thunder strike. Wind came again and knocked us off of our feet. The wind struck the fallen trees. We looked at the fallen trees, watched the treetops get snapped off, watched the fires, and suddenly Chekarin yelled, 'Look up,' and pointed with his hand. So I looked there and saw another flash, and it made another thunder, but the noise was less than before. This was the fourth strike, like normal thunder. Now I remember well, there was also one more thunder strike, but it was small and somewhere far away where the sun goes to sleep." End quote. I know that was long, but I feel like those accounts really set the scene and put you there. It had to have been so terrifying, living in the early 1900s in this remote village, nobody's around, and you wake up to balls of fire in the sky and explosions, trees falling over, this explosion being so powerful it's knocking people over. You know, people had no idea what was going on. So now that we have an understanding of what the locals would initially describe, let's talk about the investigation into the Tunguska event. World War I, the Russian Revolution, and the Civil War had been major distractions to the Tunguska site investigation. And like I said, this area was very remote. It was also very hard to get to. So it wouldn't be until 1921 that the investigation would finally begin. There was this Russian mineralogist named Leonid Kulik. He would get this team together to conduct a survey for the Soviet Academy of Sciences. At this time, they weren't able to go to the blast area yet, and this is seemingly because of low funding. But after Kulik would interview all of these people, he believed the explosion was likely caused by a meteorite. When he returned, he presented this to the powers that be, and they were like, wow, this is crazy, this is really compelling, we need to figure out what the hell happened here. So luckily, Kulik was able to get funding and approval to finally go with a team to the crash site. So this would happen in 1927. To Kulik's team's surprise, despite this massive explosion, there was no crater like what a meteorite would leave. Instead, they found an area that made up about 830 square miles where the trees had been scorched, their branches had been cleanly removed, and the trees in the center were still standing upright. So all the trees are upright in the middle, and then as you go further out of the circle, the trees had been knocked down, creating a large circular pattern. And if you're watching on YouTube, I'll put pictures here. If you're listening, go check out the Instagram page because it's really a crazy sight to see. After further investigation, it was determined that 1,287 square kilometers of forest had been destroyed by this mysterious explosion. There were 80 million fallen trees. This was an area larger than London, England. Kulik also found strange holes in the ground that he concluded were meteorite holes, but again, these weren't craters, and he didn't have the means at the time to excavate the holes. Later, a couple more expeditions were done, and basically, after looking at these holes, it was concluded these could not be craters. But they did find evidence of nickel relative to iron in the siftings of the soil, which is something that is also found in meteorites. So basically, they found material that would point to it coming off of a meteorite, but the holes in the ground were not conducive to, like, the holes that a meteorite would leave if it crashed into the Earth. Other studies also showed there was likely acid rain afterwards in the area because of the explosion. So, to me, what's so perplexing about this event is that we still don't know exactly what it was. So, let's get into some theories. Okay, so I feel like it makes sense to start with what is most widely believed. If you Google this, you're going to find a lot of scientific papers, articles that have been published. Most people widely believe that this was the result of some type of asteroid or meteor that exploded in the air before it reached the Earth's surface, which would explain why there was no crater. And this is, like, really scary and crazy to think about. Estimates by scientists place this object at being 220 million pounds and 25 stories tall. Entering the Earth's atmosphere at around 53,903 kilometers per hour or 33,500 miles per hour, which I can't even equivocate in my head. This would cause the rock to be heated as it entered the Earth's atmosphere to an incredibly high heat, around 24,704 degrees Celsius or 44,499 degrees Fahrenheit. And because of the pressure from the Earth's atmosphere, this would have caused this asteroid, meteor, rock from space to explode, and that resulted in the multiple balls of fire. It's estimated the explosion occurred somewhere between 3 to 6 miles above Earth's surface or 5 to 10 kilometers. if the explosion would have happened closer to Earth, or if it would have happened in a more populated location, perhaps the Tunguska event would be more well known because the results would have been devastating. Another theory suggested in 1930 that this was a small comet, possibly part of a comet that was in the area at the time called Encke. This was a periodic comet, and it completes an orbit of the sun every 3.3 years. This theory was initially proposed by a Czechoslovakian astronomer named Libor Krasak. What I find interesting about this theory is there's a couple things to me that seem to line up with what happened during the Tunguska event. For example, comets are made of ice and dust, which vaporizes easily at very high temperatures. If this was a comet, it would explain why there was no crater left behind. Unlike the asteroid theory, the comet theory also accounts for the glowing skies after the explosion, because dust and ice are known to disperse from comets into Earth's atmosphere, and this has been known to make the skies light up. The Beta Tauri meteor shower, which resulted from debris from a comet, is one example of this. And something that I kept wondering about that freaked me out while I was researching all of this is, could something like this happen again?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
So the good news is that an event like this should only occur about one time every 100 years, and the meteor crater type impact is only expected to occur once in a million years, meaning it's very unlikely to strike down to Earth. But it's difficult for scientists to be completely certain. There's no way to be completely sure about our atmosphere. It's constantly changing. For example, if you were to talk to an astronomer in 1993, what the chances were that a comet would hit Jupiter? The astronomer would have said, that's impossible. But just 1 year later, Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9 hit Jupiter. Astronomers are also now finding a lot of asteroids within orbits that are coming a little too close to Earth, and this is happening a lot. These have become known as near-Earth objects. And obviously, like we've talked about, if these things hit Earth, it's very, very powerful. It's scary. If you think about the Tunguska event, we were relatively speaking very lucky. If the explosion in Tunguska had actually happened in London, it would have killed millions of people. Another real risk is smaller, more frequent asteroids striking down and killing people, because small asteroids hit Earth every year. One thing I did find comforting is that the Tunguska event did result in a lot of scientific research being done. The hope is that scientists will better understand and attempt to eliminate the threat of asteroid strikes. NASA established the Planetary Defense Coordination Office, and during the DART mission, tested the technology to redirect a small asteroid if one would pose danger to Earth. So NASA now has these observing programs where they can watch for these near-Earth objects, which they call NEOs. They have meetings all the time where they talk about what might happen if we do find a large object on a collision course with Earth. But with all of that being said, I'm going to go back to my question from earlier. Could something like this happen again? Well, turns out something like this has already happened twice, and both of these events are fairly recent. October 8th, 2009, near the coastal city of Watampone in South Sulawesi in Indonesia, there was a meteor somewhere between 5 to 10 meters in diameter. It exploded 15 to 20 kilometers above the ground. This meteor was so powerful that the impact energy was between 10 to 50 kilotons, which is the equivalent of 110 million pounds of TNT. At the time, this was the largest object to tangle with Earth in over a decade. When this happened, a loud air blast was heard around 11 a.m. by locals in Indonesia, followed by the sight of a bright fireball, an explosion, and a large dust cloud, which again sounds a lot like the Tunguska event. I couldn't find much more information about this particular explosion. I don't know if there were casualties. I was able to find a little bit more about this second event, which was in 2013 in Russia. On February 15th, a small airburst occurred over Chelyabinsk, Russia, from a meteor. The object was estimated to be about the size of a five-story building, and it generated a shockwave equivalent to 550 kiloton explosion 15 miles above the ground. The explosion blew out roughly a million windows, and there were more than 1,000 people that were injured, largely due to broken glass. There was even one woman who suffered a broken spine. The other thing that caused a lot of injuries from this explosion was the sheer brightness of the meteor. The light was so incredibly intense that it was brighter than the sun. There were a couple hundred cases of eye pain, and 70 people reported suffering from temporary flash blindness. There were also about 20 people who experienced ultraviolet burns similar to sunburn. The infrasonic waves from the meteor were also recorded 15,000 kilometers away in Antarctica. So you can imagine how events like this are going to have a butterfly effect and affect all these different parts of the world. It's estimated that an event like Chelyabinsk can be expected to impact the Earth every 10 to 100 years. So now that we've talked about the more popular theories, meteorite, asteroid, comet, let's get into some lesser believed theories, but things that I still find to be very perplexing. So some people, and this really freaks me out, have pointed to the possibility of the Tunguska event being part of what is called antimatter, and I am not a scientist, I'm not going to explain this very well, but I'll do the best I can. If there's any scientists, physicists listening to this, please explain this to me in a girly pop version, but the antimatter hypothesis was presented originally in the 1960s by Cowan, Alturi, and Libby, and was supported by someone named Gentry. And this theory proposes that an anti-rock composed of antimatter caused the damage. My understanding is that it's basically like the opposite of the matter that we experience here. And so when it interacted with our Earth's atmosphere, it caused this big reverberation. The other theory that really freaks me out is the black hole theory. This was given originally by Jackson and Ryan in 1973. So they believe a black hole is what caused the Tunguska explosion. Jackson and Ryan have maintained a black hole would have pierced through the Earth's atmosphere with the ease of cutting soft butter. They say that this would have exited Earth through the Atlantic Ocean. Again, I don't really understand what this means or how it works. Other people have refuted this theory, and it does not explain the insanely bright night sky observed over Europe, but black holes have always freaked me out, and the idea of one coming here is, like, too much for my brain to handle. We know that there's black holes up in outer space, and a lot of scientists say that it's impossible for one to come here. So that's comforting, but very creepy to think about. Other people initially suggested when this first happened that this was a nuclear bomb. The fictional writings of the Soviet author Alexander Kazantsev in 1946 initially discussed this idea, but it was fiction. It was inspired by Hiroshima. Kazantsev would write that the Tunguska blast was the result of a nuclear power plant from a spaceship from Mars exploding. But this kind of got conspiracy theorists thinking, and other people have gone down this conspiracy rabbit hole to say that it was some type of nuclear event. A prominent Soviet scientist named Alexei Zolotov supposed that it was a visit by an alien spacecraft after doing a 17-year investigation. And he theorized the spacecraft had exploded accidentally due to a malfunction. Now, he did admit that there are flaws with his theory. Realizing safety devices would probably have prevented such a severe explosion. But some science writers have said that the precision and the geometry of this blast just seems too perfect to be an accident. Because remember, it created like this perfect circle. In 2004, this theory began to gain some traction again. And this was after a team of scientists exploring the area claimed to have found a large block-shaped metal device that they described as being extraterrestrial. The researchers claimed that they chipped off a piece of this object for further analysis, and this group is known as the Tunguska Space Phenomenon Foundation. And it's made up of legit scientists. These are mineralogists, physicists, chemists, and geologists. This group is led by a Russian scientist named Yuri Labvin, and they've been visiting the Tunguska area since 1994. So these scientists are saying that this could have been aliens. They said it, not me. A little before the group's 2004 expedition, Labvin was interviewed by a Russian newspaper saying, quote, "We intend to uncover evidence that will prove the fact that this was not a meteorite that rammed the Earth, but a UFO," end quote. Now, naturally, many people have tried to debunk this. A lot of scientists say that this is a hoax. One researcher from Liverpool, John Moores University, named Benny Pizer, would say about this quote, "I'm afraid this is a rather stupid hoax. The Russian team stupidly stated long before they went to Siberia that their main intention of their expedition was to find the remnants of an alien spaceship. And bingo, a week later, that's what they claim to have found," end quote. Now, I get what Pizer is saying, but I'm sorry, that's not proof that something's a hoax. Just because you say you intend to find something and you find it doesn't mean that it's a hoax. Astronomer Philip Plate has also said, quote, "I'm not saying that they didn't find an alien ship. I'm saying that it's A, unlikely in the extreme, and B, they are predisposed to make such claims, which means we need to be very skeptical, even more so than usual in such cases. If they provide sufficient evidence, then scientists are obligated to investigate," end quote. And I would side more here with what Philip Plate is saying. We should be skeptical, but we shouldn't rule it out. And if they're able to give evidence, let's investigate it. So let's get into the evidence that Labvin claims that they found on these scientific expeditions and where that leaves us with what could have happened in Siberia in 1908. So according to Labvin, him and his group found quite a bit when they were exploring here. So let's all put our tinfoil hats on. On their July 2004 expedition to the Podkamana-Tunguska River, Labvin's group claims to have come across two strange black cube-shaped stones that were 5 feet wide and had been hidden by trees. Labvin holds that these stones were, quote, "manifestly not of natural origin," meaning there's no way that they came from Earth. He would also later say his team's chemical analysis supported this theory. Labvin claimed that the material was similar to what space rockets are made out of. So what I took away from this first finding is they seem to be saying this material came from an alien spaceship. Some experts tried to say the team must have found parts of a test flight, the fifth Vostok test flight, which had crashed near Tunguska. But apparently the materials found here have iron silicate and this unknown material in them that could not have been used in the Vostok test flight. So apparently they were able to debunk that, and now it's a mystery what these black cube stone-like things were. And this isn't the only thing that Labvin's group says that they found. They also said they came across a white stone that they said was the size of a peasant's hut, and it was in the middle of the devastated forest. It had been there since the crash, according to locals. It had been there for so long that they started calling it the reindeer stone. This stone is composed of crystalline matter that is not found in this area. The team also found quartz slabs covered in strange markings. Valery Uvarov, head of the Department of UFO Research at the National Security Academy in St. Petersburg, was interviewed by a UFO magazine in 2004. Uvarov was talking about how the Tunguska explosion was caused by the collision of a meteor and a missile, and Labvin has also gone on record saying that he supports this theory, but he has more of an alien spin on it. Labvin believes this was a meteor coming to Earth and that aliens saved us. He says, quote, "I am fully confident and can make an official statement that we were saved by some forces of a superior civilization. They exploded this enormous meteorite that headed towards us with enormous speed," end quote. And I gotta say, I kind of love the idea of us about to have this near-Earth devastation and aliens interceding. Many witnesses also recounted that the object they saw that day in the sky had a very low speed and changed course, which would mean this would not have been a comet. It's also been reported that after the Tunguska event, people and animals in the area became mysteriously ill. Now, this could have been because of like the acid rain, like we talked about, for example, but other people say this could have been radiation sickness. Anybody listening who's like an alien enthusiast knows that radiation sickness is very often reported in these cases. So, could it be possible that the Tunguska event was aliens saving us from extreme devastation? I'll let you decide. The Tunguska explosion on June 30th, 1908 was the largest impact seemingly caused by an asteroid in recorded history and is certainly, in my opinion, one of the most perplexing natural disasters of all time that most people have never heard of. And maybe it was the work of aliens. So that, everybody, is the insane story of the Tunguska event. I want to thank my dad for requesting this topic. When he told me to do the Tunguska event, I thought that it was something nuclear. I thought it kind of went back to the Cold War. And when I was reading more and more about it, I was like, oh, wow, this is so much more than that. And I really had to do a lot of research because I'm not a scientist and found so many things confusing. And then towards the end of my research, I stumbled across all the alien stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so interesting. So thank you, Dad, for requesting this. If you have a topic request, or if you have a listener story, anything mysterious, true crime, perplexing, paranormal, what have you, I would love to read your story. Send it to me at perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. I have a lot of listener requests that are going in a queue. And if you are a member of the Perplexed Society, a patron, those requests get bumped to the front of the queue. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you're watching on YouTube, I would love if you hit the subscribe button and the notification button. Like this video. Drop a comment down below. What do you think the Tunguska event was? I've also never seen a meteor shower, and I'm wondering if anybody else has. If you're listening on a podcast platform, I would love if you leave a 5-star review wherever you are listening. Each time you do that, it boosts me up the charts. That is the best way to spread the word and get me new listeners. I would love if you continue to tell your friends and family about the show as well. And if you're listening on Spotify, you can drop a comment on this exact episode. I want to hear what y'all think about the Tunguska event. If you want early and ad-free episodes, if you want to unlock tons and tons and tons of exclusive bonus content, join the Perplexed Society for as little as $2 a month. That is patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. I have creepy stories from the internet. I just released another volume, volume 10, and that is all about alien abductions. I have my Texas Urban Legend series. That's where I talk about creepy, spooky things, lore from Texas. I have another one of those coming out soon about this devastating hurricane in Galveston that led to a lot of paranormal phenomenon. And I've got a bunch of other urban legends on there. I have, I think, over 20 episodes of documentary coverage. My latest one was the Gabby Petito documentary. I am about to do some more documentary coverage in a couple of weeks. So go check all of that out if that interests you. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week and stay safe. And I will talk to you next week. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast. Hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brannon. Assistant producer is TJ McRae. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by leaving a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to support. Have a topic request or a perplexing story of your own you'd like to share? Send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. If you would like to support the show further and unlock exclusive bonus content, join the Perplexed Society at patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. Perplexity merch and additional support links can be found in the episode description. Until next week, stay curious.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.